This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
A reminder, Thursday Night Football tonight, San Francisco and Seattle. Kind of an interesting game. You can hear it here on Sports Radio 610, Thursday Night Football, every week here on Sports Radio 610.
I'm just chuckling over the... what we're about to talk about.
Oh, okay.
I just the weirdness of the NFL right now. There's a very weird dynamic with Drake May that's funny. It's funny unless you're in the situation that the Patriots are in,
it's not very funny to them.
I'm thinking about Drake May, and I was trying to in my mind make some comps, and as Drake May will likely start for the Patriots this week in his rookie debut. That, all right, you know, I almost feel like the upside of Drake May and what you might see of him is almost a version of what people wanted to believe Bo Nix was doing in the preseason, where he was making some really nice throws, he was scrambling and doing some things athletically, but he was doing it versus backups and rookies, yeah. And it didn't look like it was going to translate to the NFL. Drake May is a better version of Bo Nix in a lot of ways, and I think he is very, very dangerous, but I think, like Casario and others have said, like, hey, he was drafted number 3 overall for a reason. We're at a point right now with NFL quarterbacks where when I hear a quarterback is drafted number 3 overall, I'm like, yeah, yeah, like in 2024.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't... that's like being drafted in the second or third round a decade ago. Everybody's so desperate to get a quarterback that I'm like, yeah, is he like a real number 3 overall pick?
Well, especially behind two other quarterbacks in the draft.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, he was the 3rd overall pick, but he was also the 3rd quarterback taken in that draft. Let's get to D'Amico and Nick talking about the Patriots. Here is D'Amico Ryans. This is from his coach's show earlier this week on preparing for the Patriots' desire to run the football against the Texans.
Yes, they do. That's going to be that's the biggest thing for this week is whoever's at quarterback doesn't matter. Like, they want to run the ball. They're really good at creating explosives in a run game. So, and they play really good run defense. So we have our hands full when it comes to that. We didn't play the run well the past 2 weeks. So defensively, it's a big challenge for us. Like, we got to step up. We got to stop the run offensively. See, can we get it going?
Yeah, I will say that. That part of the defense has slipped a little bit since the first 2 weeks. Like, the first 2 weeks, the run defense was excellent. Jonathan Taylor had 16 carries for 48 yards, if I remember correctly. He averaged 3 yards a carry. Week 2, DeAndre Swift had 14 carries for 18 yards against the Texans. And then things got obviously very leaky against the Minnesota Vikings. They gave up their first 100-yard rusher in Aaron Jones. They statistically were okay against Jacksonville. They gave up the big play to Tank Bigsby, a couple big plays to Tank Bigsby in the run game that could have come back to bite them, but they shut it down at the goal line.
Yeah.
And then last week, I thought James Cook did some good things in the run game for Buffalo. It wasn't excellent last week.
When you wonder, okay, the Texans defense is doing some things really well, but it doesn't, you know, they don't feel like a complete defense, just like the offense is doing some things really well, but they're just not scoring enough points. Allowing other teams to run on you consistently and then coming up with a big play here and there to stop a drive, it just never feels as sustainable. Like, because they're really good at coming up with a big TFL. Or, you know, maybe they get a sack or they force bad passes to kill a drive. They come up with these moments that kill drives. And yet, when you're consistently playing bad teams to one-score games, yeah, letting the other team just possess the ball by running the ball as long as they have, it makes for closer football games. And that's where they are right now. It's just, there's a part of, all right, when you get into late in the season and into the playoffs, are you genuinely a good defense or is it just a little bit of a statistical mirage? Right now, it feels a little bit like a statistical mirage because they can't they don't look like a team that can stop the run when they have to stop the run.
Yep.
So when you go up against a really a very physical team in the playoffs, are you going to be able to stop the run when that team has a 10-point lead or a 7-point lead? It doesn't feel like it right now.
Here was Nick Caserio on Texans All Access on the GM show. He does a hit with John Harris and Mark Vandermeer each week. It's good stuff. This is Nick, and Nick's scouting reports on the other team are starting to become a thing on social media. People love the fact that Nick can basically recite the entire two deep for every team in the NFL, complete with college background and where they were drafted and everything else. This is Nick Caserio's scouting report on the woeful, my words, not his, woeful Patriots offense.
And offensively, I would say the two best players are really the backs, really, Gibby and Ramondre Stevenson. Stevenson is as good of a back there is, well-rounded, good balance, good body control, strong, tough, good player in a passing game. Signing Gibson in the offseason, who kind of is a change of pace guy. He's got some speed. Jacoby's done a good job. Jacoby hasn't turned the ball over, right? So he hasn't given it to the other team. I think their turnover margin, they're in the top 10 in terms of just the overall margin, so they haven't given it away, and they've taken it away. So two good backs. Good tight end in Hunter Henry, who's very reliable, and then a receiver. Have a number of young players who they're kind of working through some things with. But you know, Pop Douglas is a really good player. Played well as a rookie, getting born back. So in that offensive line, they've just had a number of players in there because of injuries. So they're just trying to kind of piece it together there. But number of things that they do well, they run the ball really well. Offensively, they don't turn the ball over, and defensively, they kind of give you multiplicity of looks. They have good players. They've been in 3-1 score games, so went to overtime with Seattle, went beat Cincinnati, and then kind of came down to the wire there against Miami last week. So it's a good football team, so we're going to have to go up there with the right mindset and be ready to go.
This is, I mean, this is true. Like, you listen to the guys he's listing there. Like, Ramondre Stevenson sounds like LaDainian Tomlinson compared to all these guys he's listing. You know, like Kendrick Bourne's coming back, and they got this rookie that I've never heard of before. Like, I've never heard of before. Like, man, this is really one of those games, Seth, that like if they just don't have one of these special teams blunders and they just protect the football, they should beat these guys by at least 10 points. You know,
if they could just play clean football.
I'm not saying you need to be explosive. It doesn't need to look great. Just don't do stupid stuff.
We were looking at the box score from last week, and it was the Texans averaged 6.5 yards per play. Yeah. The Bills averaged 4.5 yards per play.
Yeah.
Big disparity there. And yet, it came down to the wire. And on a down-by-down basis, the Texans were physically a better football team than the Bills. And yet, because they just can't keep it clean, it ends up being closer than it needs to be. And it's very, very possible that that's the way it goes with the New England Patriots.
And the Patriots have played in some close games this year. I mean, they played in 3-1 score games. They should have beat Seattle earlier this year. They did beat the Cincinnati Bengals in Cincinnati. Now, granted, these are all with Jacoby Brissett at quarterback, and it sounds like that interview with Nick was probably done before the Drake May news was confirmed, because he doesn't mention Drake May at all in there. He only mentioned Jacoby. But I thought that would be a good thing to play just so people can get a flavor for who exactly the skill guys are on this offense and just how big a disparity it is between what the Texans have at those positions and what the Patriots have at those positions.
Yeah, look, I know the Bengals were in a weird spot early in the season, but they beat the Bengals. Yeah. So, and you have the wild card of, as much as I fear Jacoby Brissett because of personal experience with him, the unknown wild card that is the rookie quarterback, where you go in and you have no idea. This is what happens with rookie quarterbacks. The Cowman, they've got a pared down game plan. They get really, really good at a few of the things they want to do with that quarterback, but the defense has zero clue what it is. So that's the most efficient and the best that quarterback will be all season at running a few plays really well and with the defense not having a clue what those plays are going to be. Mm-hmm. And then the real test begins when teams see, okay, next week, the Patriots' next opponent will say, okay, this is what they like doing with Drake May. This is what they think he can do. And it's a lot easier, where right now you've just got to sit back and say, all right, we know what they've done so far with Jacoby Brissett. They're going to tweak it. We don't know what the play calling tendencies are going to be or anything like that. And it's hard to go in with a great plan. And then all of a sudden, a guy like Drake May, who's totally physically capable of making some really nice plays, they have great debuts sometimes.
Yep. Here was D'Amico Ryans. This is from his coach's show earlier this week. We know there was Stephon Diggs, and a few other Texans going against their former team with the Bills. This is on the dynamic of players facing their old teams.
It's always a big deal when you play your former team because, you know, however you parted ways, there is some resentment there. You know, right. Some guy, you feel like, oh, I should be with that team forever. It doesn't happen now as it did in the past, but it's always some tension there, right? And you want to just show your team like, hey, you shouldn't have let me go, or this is the reason why. And you want to have a big game versus your team. So knowing that for Steph, and I know all the noise that came in from the Bills and Steph and that breakup there. And I knew all that was going on, but I didn't want to tell the team about that or make it a bigger deal than I needed to. I think our guys knew that, everybody knew it, but I just didn't want to make it a big deal in front of the team. But, and I think Nico said it, some other guys said, like, we wanted to get that win for Steph. We know how much it meant to him. And so I'm so excited or happy for him to have a really good game versus his old team, and for us to get the win. You know, it meant a lot to him, and I know he'll always remember this one.
So this is Shaq Mason week.
What
Shaq Mason. I was, you know, is Shaq Mason the only guy that played for the Patriots on the team right now? Is Derek Rivers? I assume Derek Rivers is still in the organization somewhere because we just can't quit Derek Rivers.
He's not.
He's with the Colts. Derek Rivers is with the Colts.
Miles Bryant, I believe, has some Patriots history. Yeah, Miles.
That's right.
Miles Bryant, it was a former Patriot.
So Shaq Mason, it's Shaq Mason's revenge game.
Well,
damn it.
Yeah. Even though Tampa was the one who let him go to us. But, yes, he played in New England for a bunch of years, Shaq.
Well, but
Mason,
it's also a former team that you go against. Yeah, it doesn't have to be the direct swap for swap. This
for
is
sure.
a selfish thing. It's like, yeah, that's a team that let me go back in the day.
Casario's the biggest one, and you've brought this up, and we brought this up this week about Casario. And I know some people are going to point out, no, he went back up there in the preseason last year. The regular season's different. And I think that, look, all the dynamic D'Amico just got done talking about in that cut, I don't think exists with Nick. They didn't fire Nick Caserio and he wound up in Houston. Like, the Texans tried to get Nick out of New England three different times and finally were successful in doing so because they wanted him to be the GM of this team so very badly. And Nick is, I think, outwardly and probably inwardly super thankful for the 20 years he had in New England. I mean, he has six Super Bowl rings, and he saw how a top-flight organization was run, so he could take the bits and pieces that he thought were applicable here and use them. And I think Nick's really good at pulling pieces from everywhere, from D'Amico with San Francisco and whatnot. I'm guessing that, and I don't think Nick would ever say this, but I'm guessing that he is going back up there huge chest puffed out, because he's going back up there with an organization that he has been a huge part of rebuilding, that is one of the best teams in football right now.
Mm-hmm.
And he's going back up there watching a Patriots, looking at a Patriots organization, or at least the on-field product, that looks nothing like the one that he left back in, well, when he left in 2020, it was post-Brady, but you know what I mean. Nothing like the one he was in the building for 19 years with Tom Brady.
For everything you think about with the Texans. Yeah, you know what? I'm looking at the various players that have played for both the Patriots and the Texans. This might be this is a turning point in terms of Miles Bryant might be the first player in NFL history who's had a much better time playing for the Texans than for the Patriots in terms of team success and whatnot.
Yeah.
Because his first year with the Patriots was in 2020. So it's not like he was there for any of the Patriots' good years.
No.
Otherwise, you're looking, okay, Danny Amendola, he had a better time with the Patriots. Rex Burkhead, Vince Wilfork, better time with the Patriots.
Yes.
All of those guys obviously had much better. Shaq Mason, better time with the Patriots.
So far,
because he was there for Super Bowls.
Yep.
So, Miles Bryant is the pivot point.
That's it.
I need three interceptions out of Miles Bryant.
He's the fork in the road. I don't know how many Patriots the Texans are going to be cherry-picking over the next several years. The Texans are the team now that cuts guys that get picked up by other teams. You know what I mean? So that'll be fun, man. I'm happy for Nick. He's going back up there with a really good football team, and the team that he used to be a part of is the dregs of the NFL right now. That's kind of fun. Last one from Caserio here from Texans All Access. Take a listen to this. This is Nick Caserio describing Jerod Mayo. Does this description of Jerod Mayo mirror the description of anybody in the building with the Texans right now?
Yeah, when Jerod came in as a rookie, I mean, he kind of earned his stripes right from the get-go. I mean, very few players, you know, I don't want to say it doesn't happen, but the fact that he was a captain on a rookie team or as a rookie on that team speaks to his leadership. So Jerod was a very smart player at Tennessee. And then when he showed up, he was a good football player in the SEC. And then his leadership and his production really stood out. And he has a way of connecting with a lot of people. So you saw that as a player. At the end of his career, he had to deal with some injuries. So then he kind of started to transition out. He spent some time in private business before he transitioned back. But he kind of started at the lowest level, came in as a quality control coach. Nothing was, you know, he had to earn everything. Yep. Nothing was guaranteed. And he put a lot of work behind the scenes. And anytime that you're replacing somebody the caliber of Coach Belichick, it's never an easy situation. Right. But I think the important thing is he's kind of handled it and put his spin on the program and doing the things that he thinks are important, making it his program. And you're starting to see that in terms of how they play. But Jerod's a really smart, smart individual, really good person, good football player, and he's going to be a good head coach. He is a good head coach.
DeMeco.
So it's DeMeco. And honestly, this is where, you know, I think something that we try to gloss over in our minds sometimes is that, you know, Caserio and Jack Easterby did have a very close working relationship here for a little while.
Yeah.
For a couple of 1.5 seasons or so.
Yeah.
When Caserio first got here.
Mm-hmm.
And that it was one of the reasons that I felt like Caserio would really like DeMeco was because when Easterby and Caserio were in New England together, they both were charged by the owner at various times. It kind of like, hey, deconstruct exactly what's gone on here and the things that might be able to sustain it on into the future. And we know that, man, at various times, Easterby was really trying to push Jerod Mayo. So I don't know if Caserio was, you know, like 100% on board with Jerod Mayo too, but like Easterby loved Jerod Mayo. We know that when Caserio was here, they were dipping into the Josh McCown, hey, former player, but who has all these awesome personality traits and everything. They were very interested in Josh McCown, potentially.
Yeah.
He was a finalist for the head coaching job. So, yeah, I think that DeMeco is whatever, theoretically, possibly, whatever mold that Nick Caserio is looking for in Jerod Mayo, that's exactly what DeMeco was, and it was probably really easy for him to identify some of those things.
Yeah, that's a great point. That's a really good point. All right, they have revised the season win totals in Vegas on NFL teams. 5 games in, we got new numbers. Would you go over or under for the Texans on their new revised win total? I'll tell you what it is and tell you what we think coming up next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
About to talk about overs and unders and whatnot. Looking up at the TV, they have over under Drake May touchdown passes this weekend, 0.5. And Orlovsky's saying less than, or he's saying Drake May's not going to throw a touchdown pass this weekend. I think Orlovsky thinks Drake May might die against the Texans defense this weekend from all the various footage I've seen off of ESPN.
That oh, really? Does he have that very, very serious look on his face?
Getting fed to the wolves.
O shape with his mouth.
Yeah, and, getting fed to the wolves. Not the confused, what the hell is Stephen A. saying look on his face, but he sounds very concerned for Drake May, which is it's good news for the Texans, man.
I think about Orlovsky every time a team is backed up in the end zone. I feel bad for Orlovsky because even, you know, the Texans, when they were backed up last week, it could potentially have been a little bit dicey there when they were in a potential safety, when they ran the ball ineffectively, and they remained backed up and they had, but I'm like, okay, yeah, CJ's not going to pull in Orlovsky.
No, and that's the thing.
He's not
going to
run out of the back of the end zone.
You're just highlighting it. It's a proper noun now. It's pulling an Orlovsky. It's, you know, when you get it named after you, he's kind of embraced it. There was a college quarterback that did it in a game, I think, maybe. And Orlovsky, like, tweeted, like, victory. Like, I'm not the last one to do this anymore. He's cool about it. He knows. All right, so the Texans, they revised some of the season win totals in Vegas on a bunch of NFL teams. Some got really big upgrades. Some got some severe downgrades. The Texans got their total pushed up from 9.5 wins, Seth, to 10.5 wins. So the over-under right now, if you want to get some action on the Texans, is 10.5 wins on the season. How are you feeling about over or under 10.5 wins?
I think it's been at 10.5 for a while now. I think since they started 2-0, wasn't it? Didn't it go up to 10.5?
Did it? I don't know. I'm just looking at it. It was 9.5 to start the season.
It was 9.5 to start the season. After they started off 2-0, that was enough of a bump to be like, all right, you know, chances are that you've got one of these in the bank. I feel pretty good about it. I do think that there's enough of what ails the Texans right now is they sit with a 4-1 record, but they just haven't looked exactly like what you think they're capable of. I think it's more likely than not that they fix a lot of this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Right now is a good test just because hopefully they shouldn't be any more banged up in the future than they are right now. They're going to lose one or two key players to IR for the season at some point. They already have with Brevin Jordan. But the return of Joe Mixon can make a big, big difference if he comes back and stays healthy the rest of the time. At some point, Nico Collins coming back is going to make a big difference. And that some of these teams that you wonder about, like the Jets or whomever else, they're not necessarily, you know, at the beginning of the season, you're thinking about, okay, if they have to face peak Aaron Rodgers, what's it going to be like? This isn't peak Aaron Rodgers.
No.
You know, some of these teams have fallen back to earth a little bit. Not that the Jets is an easy out by any stretch of the imagination.
No.
But it's just, things are never what they seem at the beginning of the year.
They may have, the Jets may very well, and you're kind of going down the road that's the thing I look at when I look at season win totals is, okay, what does the rest of the schedule look like? Knowing full well it could change, any of these could change with a significant injury, right?
Right.
As pertains to the Jets, they have a really good defense. They may have just fired the biggest reason they have a really good defense, Robert Saleh. You know what I mean?
Yeah, Ulrich is the defensive coordinator, but it's Saleh's show.
Right.
And,
right.
I think too, the Jets are the most like headline grabbing number. We went into this season with uncertainty about exactly what Trevor Lawrence was going to look like this year. I didn't think he was going to be this bad.
Right.
I had my doubts and questions about Trevor Lawrence and what he was as a quarterback, but I didn't think it was going to be this bad. I think that, you know, Tennessee as a team is a little bit more of a wild card, I think, but like you go to the Cowboys, the Dolphins certainly.
The Dolphins
are not the team that you thought they were when you were looking at that murderous stretch of schedule where they play the Dolphins, the Chiefs, and the Ravens. So, yeah, I think that all lines up to be where 10.5 feels kind of conservative at this point.
Yeah.
If the Texans start firing on all cylinders, then it seems very conservative.
Yeah.
That's a big if.
Big if. I just look at it like the Texans, as compared to their opponents, the Texans have made more what should have been back-breaking mistakes in games. Bad turnovers, bad special teams plays, penalty after penalty after penalty. You know what I mean? Like if you're looking at it just based purely on the types of plays that can decide games, singular plays that can decide games, the Texans have had more back-breaking bad plays like that than either they forced on their opponents or that their opponents have been kind enough to gift the Texans. The Texans have given more gifts to their opponents than their opponents have given to them, and yet they sit at 4-1. You know, they're going to stop doing that stuff, I think, because they're a good football team. The penalties, they already dwindled a little bit this weekend, and they even kept them contained to one quarter. That was very nice of them to do. They had 2 turnovers in this game against the Bills, and the Bills had none, and they still won the football game, the Texans did. So there's so much more room to grow, and that they're 4-1 while doing this. I feel really good about this team right now.
And even aside from all that, if you're just trying to be as objective and emotionless as possible, they've got a 4-win head start on the second two-thirds of the second, you know, two-thirds or three-quarters of the season.
Yeah. Yep. The biggest increase of any team is the team the Texans have their one loss against. Minnesota went from 6.5 wins to 12.5 wins. When your win total is 12.5, you are considered a really, really elite football team in the NFL.
I'm guessing he's the favorite for Coach of the Year right now.
O'Connell, for sure. Yes, he is.
I think the fact that he's getting what he did out of Sam Darnold, or what he has gotten out of Sam Darnold, the fact that the defense, you know, as a head coach, he gets credit for the defense operating the way. You know what, honestly, he hired Flores. A lot of people thought Flores was never going to get another job in the NFL. He won't. No siree. Like, okay, well, yeah, he's a really good defensive coordinator, so he's going to get a job.
Yeah, he will now. The other team, there were 9 teams whose season win totals have been revised upward. The Texans are one of those 9. Just one win. The only other teams to have their total revised by multiple wins are Denver, Kansas City, and the Commanders each had their win total bumped up by two. How sustainable do you think this upward tick is for these three teams, Denver, Kansas City, Washington?
Washington, I think, I mean, their offensive line is, it's not just that Jaden Daniels that's been impressive. I think he has bona fide wide receiving talent. The offensive line has been playing well. And you're doing all that with a defensive-minded head coach. The biggest X factor really there is just the history of Cliff Kingsbury offenses. It's weird. People forget that Kyler Murray was the rookie of the year as well. You know, it's not necessarily that, oh, hey, it's as simple as, wow, what they're doing right now is exactly what they're going to do for perpetuity. There's still a wait and see element there, but I think structurally that Washington has a lot of things going for him.
Yeah.
And Jaden Daniels is better than Bo Nix.
Yeah, yeah. And at Kansas City, it's hard to go, no, the Chiefs can't sustain this. Although regular season.
Oh, yeah, you know what? I even excluded them from I exclude them from any of these conversations. They're just in a different category.
What about yours and my favorite there, Sean Payton and Bo Nix? You think that's, they got their win total bumped up by two here. They're, you know, at least the odds makers are buying in right now.
I have to credit Sean Payton.
Yeah.
That's what I have to do.
Begrudgingly, yeah.
I have to begrudgingly credit Sean Payton. I think that he's a good enough coach to lift them to mediocre plus
eight
with
wins.
That quarterback.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that it'll be worth paying him $20 million a year for the next 73 years.
Yes.
Sure, yeah.
12 NFL teams had their season win total downgraded. The biggest one, the Cleveland Browns. 8.5 to start the season. Vegas has them at 4.5 wins.
Oh, my God.
To give some perspective, you know who else has a 4.5 win total right now? Right now, the New England Patriots, who the Texans play this weekend. The Browns are the Patriots right now, in the eyes of the odds makers. And their schedule coming up, Seth, is, I mean, this could, Kevin Stefanski might not make it to Thanksgiving, man. Like, it's their schedule. They play the Eagles this weekend. I'm trying to pull up their schedule right now as we speak.
They play the Eagles, then they play the Bengals, the Ravens, the Chargers. Those are the next three games.
Then the
Saints, then the Steelers.
Yeah.
Steelers versus Deshaun Watson would be a good one.
Yeah, yeah, they play the Steelers twice in 3 weeks right there. Actually, Amy and I are going to that second one in Pittsburgh on December the 8th. Will Deshaun...
Then down the line, they still have the Chiefs, the Bengals again, of course.
Yeah.
It doesn't get any prettier. And then, of course, the Ravens again, too. They haven't really faced the meat of their divisional opponents
They haven't
yet.
Faced any divisional opponents yet.
They still have the... Yeah, Sean, the meat. As in all of them, 100%
of them. 100%
of them,
yeah.
Of the toughest division in football.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Oh, that's rough, man. Yeah. That's rough.
Yeah. Other downgraded teams, San Francisco, the Bengals, the Dolphins, the Jags, the Rams, all had their win total bumped down by two. Those are all teams that are struggling right now for sure. Man, San Francisco, Seattle tonight's going to be an interesting Thursday night game. It's in Seattle. Seattle's 3-2. San Fran's 2-3. San Fran is still third on the odds board to win the Super Bowl. So the betting community still believes in San Fran to a degree.
I feel like, is Christian McCaffrey by far the biggest asset the running back syndicate has right now? Or was that then when they had that running back summit to get together and discuss, hey, how come running backs aren't getting paid like we feel they should? The absence of Christian McCaffrey is a big deal with that offense. We see it in Houston. Absence of Joe Mixon.
Yeah.
And some of that's still on spec.
Yes.
Because we've seen one really good performance out of Joe Mixon, but it's just with your eyeball test, he's a different running back than anybody else on the Texans roster.
By absence, absolutely. McCaffrey, I would say the years that Saquon Barkley and Derrick Henry are having as free agent running backs that have signed in new places is helping the running back syndicate a little bit, right? I mean, those are the top two guys for offensive player of the year right now is Barkley and Derrick Henry.
And yet at the same time, the fact that Christian McCaffrey and Joe Mixon are injured are also exactly why they don't get paid like you feel like they should.
Because bingo.
Nobody trusts that any of these guys are ever going to stay healthy.
Yep.
No matter how many games they play without getting injured or whatever, teams just don't trust that their running backs can stay healthy.
Texans tied for fourth on the odds board, by the way, to win the Super Bowl this year. Kansas City 1, Baltimore 2. San Fran still 3, man. They're hanging on to San Fran. Big night for the Niners tonight. You can hear that game here on Sports Radio 610. They're actually tied, Seth, at 11-1 with three teams that they've either played or will play before the season is over. They're tied at 11-1 with Buffalo, Minnesota, and the Detroit Lions. So Texans tied for fourth, 11-1 if you want to get on them right now to win a Super Bowl. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you as we head up towards 9 o'clock. We'll circle back to the Texans and the Patriots at 9 o'clock. The breakdown of Drake May, C.J. Stroud's unwillingness to give him advice was very funny yesterday. Are we buying what Aaron Rodgers was selling yesterday on the McAfee show about his possible involvement in the firing of Robert Saleh? And who's the next head coach to get fired? We've got that coming up next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, big story this week, the Jets firing Robert Saleh. He's the first head coach fired this year. Probably won't be the last. Aaron Rodgers, believed by many to at least have some fingerprints on this firing of Robert Saleh. He resents people that accuse him of this. He was on the Pat McAfee show yesterday, and he addressed the rumors that it was indeed him that encouraged Woody Johnson, the Jets owner, to fire Robert Saleh. Here's Aaron Rodgers.
As far as any of the ridiculous allegations out there, I'm not going to spend more than one sentence in response to it, and that is that I resent any of those accusations because they're patently false. And it's interesting the amount of power that people think that I have, which I don't. But I love Robert, and it was one of those days yesterday.
No other team in the NFL last year was signing Randall Cobb. No other team was giving Alan Lazard $12 million a year or whatever he was getting. And I promise you, no other team was lining up to make Nathaniel Hackett their offensive coordinator. I can understand Aaron Rodgers maybe saying that I didn't have anything to do with this. People can believe what they want. To resent the accusations completely ignores all the things the Jets have done at his behest to bend over backwards to make his Jets experience as pleasurable for him as possible, Seth. For him to resent it, I think, is just silly. Like, to not understand why people would think the optics would indicate that Aaron Rodgers had something to do with this firing.
Yeah, that's, I think the thing about Aaron Rodgers and this firing is whether, okay, was it done because of the direction of Aaron Rodgers, or was it done on behalf of Aaron Rodgers' best interests? And it's murky when it comes to, okay, how much direct involvement Aaron Rodgers may have had in that. Because Woody Johnson, the owner, may have just felt like, okay, he was going to call Aaron Rodgers and have a conversation with him about like what he thinks about the offense and whatever, and with the mind that, okay, I got to make a decision on Robert Saleh here. And maybe Aaron Rodgers will say something that saves Robert Saleh, or maybe Aaron Rodgers will say something that dooms Robert Saleh, but I'm not going to ask him specifically about what he thinks we should do.
Yeah. Ross Tucker brought this up earlier when he was on with us. Ross was on with us today, usually on with us on Tuesdays. He was on with us in the 7 o'clock hour. You can use the Odyssey Rewind feature or find it on the podcast later. If you like, download the Odyssey app. Ross brought it up, and he's right. Like, okay, everybody has confirmed that Woody Johnson, the owner, and Aaron Rodgers spoke Sunday after the game, after the loss in London. Like, nobody's denied that the two had a conversation. What the hell else would they have been talking about that didn't even, like, tiptoe close to talking about Robert Saleh? You know what I mean? Were they talking to giving each other stock tips? Were they talking politics? Were they? No, they were talking about the game, I'm sure. And that's the weird part. Like, it's just like you had a conversation. I'm sure there was something said in that conversation that had to be interpreted as we need to move in a different direction.
Like, when you get to be an older player in the NFL, and if people like want to get your opinion on things, the front office and the ownership and everybody else and coaches, they don't want to put players in a position where they're actually asking them about something that might affect the guy's jobs. Like, they don't want to go up to a player and say, hey, should we get rid of this guy, mm-hmm. or should we keep this guy? But you can tell when a guy that doesn't normally talk to you, like the GM, about stuff like on a week-by-week basis, kind of just comes up casually and says, like, so, you think this young player, you think he's coming along? Or, like, what do you, like, how's he working out? What do you think he needs to work on? you get the sense of like, oh, okay, they're trying to make a decision on this guy. So it's dicey. You could either, you could save somebody, you could give them tepid praise, you could do whatever, but you know that it's going to be, it's going into the, it's going into the evaluation process, whatever it might be.
How much do you think? Sorry, I didn't mean to finish your thought. I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, go ahead.
I'm
rambling.
Yeah, no, it's okay. Do you think Robert Saleh's phone is ringing off the hooks in the next several weeks? Not necessarily for jobs, but with every Jets opponent, one of which is the Houston Texans in 3 weeks, looking for tips on the Jets? Like,
I would imagine.
And if so, does Robert Saleh take those calls? Like, is Robert Saleh in revenge mode right now against the New York Jets?
Where did we get this into? There was a really glaring example of it, of a recently fired coach who ended up on the sideline of an opposing team. And in the last couple of years, our listeners will remember.
Okay.
He got fired and then ended up actually like working for another team like on the sidelines versus his previous team.
Okay.
And there's that element of, I think it probably comes down to an individual choice, because these are the guys you were coaching, like the players. These are the players you were coaching.
Yeah.
And that you want them to do well. You might hate Woody Johnson for firing you, but do you feel comfortable just immediately saying like, all right, now I'm going to screw all those other guys?
Yeah.
I think that's an individual decision. Okay. So I don't know.
Yeah, like how vengeful is Robert Saleh? Like this has been reported that he was shocked that he got fired. Like he was having a staff meeting that morning to announce changes he was making to the logistics on game day. You know, he was going to demote reportedly Nathaniel Hackett, and then he gets called into the owner's office and he's shocked. And I think the football world was a little shocked. Did you expect Robert Saleh to get fired after five games at 2-3?
No. They're a team that was still very much a question mark. This is just exactly, okay, what are these guys going to be?
Seth, if they beat the Bills this weekend, they're in first place in the AFC East.
Somebody fact check me on this, because by the way, I was wrong about that first down run frequency stat that I brought up earlier. Thank God the actual stat nerds rescued me. I deleted the tweet.
I said it a lot.
I know, man. That's why I can't be trusted. I can't be trusted with statistics. They have the highest percentage of their first downs are by pass. That was what the stat I was looking at. Oh. I interpreted it as that on first down, they're passing the ball more frequently than anybody else.
Highest percentage. So
I took a screenshot of the tweet and posted a correction. I deleted the original tweet, but I want to be accountable for it. I said flat out, I need to check with Texans Cap and others before I actually put anything numerically based out there. I apologize. I cannot be trusted with numbers.
You said you triple checked it.
I did. But it was me doing the triple checking. You know?
I do know.
It's like asking a criminal to go over exactly like evaluate your life and all the decisions you've made.
Oh,
yes.
Oh man.
Well, I've gone over my record and I don't think it's that bad. I would throw this case out,
frankly,
Your Honor.
I got bad judges.
Okay, somebody fact check me on this. I think this doesn't involve numbers. I think it was Hugh Jackson, after he got fired by the Browns, ended up on the sideline for the Bengals versus the Browns.
Okay.
Because Baker Mayfield said something like, it's kind of messed up that he's out there, you know, helping these guys after he said he was devoted to us.
Okay,
and everything.
Yeah, that's a Googleable thing too, probably. I'm not saying you Google it. I'm saying somebody in our audience Google it and then text us if it's accurate. You okay?
All right. Okay, we got to reaffirm the old rule of I'm not allowed to look up stats during the show.
Okay.
I can do it. Before the show, I'm fine. But during the show, when I find these stats and I roll with them, I'd say I'm batting about 250 on that.
Yeah.
It's really bad. I apologize to everybody.
But I'm going to need your... if you want me to be the one checking you on this, I'm going to need you to tell me, hey, I'm about to take this drink. You know what I mean? Like, I'm going to need you to, hey, Sean, I know I'm addicted. I'm a statoholic. I'm about to consume some of these stats here. And then you can't get mad at me when I step in and take the glass out of your hand, you know, and say, here's something else to look at on the internet other than these stats. You know, if you need me to intervene,
Okay.
And then I'm going to need you to tell me when you're looking up stats on your computer.
You're going to have to say no. You got to put down the drink.
Put down the drink.
You can't drive home, whatever.
Yes. Yes.
All right. By the same token, though, do I have your promise that if I call you at 3 a.m. and tell you that I've looked up a stat, that you'll rescue me, but without punishing me for it?
Yes.
That, like, okay, you'll come pick me up and take me home, and I won't get grounded for it.
Correct.
Okay.
I promise you, this is not a. This is in this day and age, we are not just Payne and Pendergast from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. In the age of social media and constant communication with everybody, we are 24/7. So I will be there for you. If at 3 in the morning you're like, oh, I need to know, I must know exactly what the expected points added for the Texans on third downs in the second and third quarter are. Because I feel like they're really good, but everybody on Twitter is saying they're really bad. I will drive over to your house, and I will get you, and I will pull the laptop out of your hand, and I'll splash water in your face, and I'll say, Seth, stop it. So, yes, I will do my part in this.
I'm the worst. I hate me right now.
Oh, I hate me so much. Stop.
No. Don't anybody text in your pop psychology about how I can about negative self thought. In this moment, I need this self flagellation. I'm the worst. I am the worst.
Okay.
I'm the absolute worst.
Okay.
Oh.
All right. You have 7 minutes here to get your mind right again. Okay, or however long we got till 9 o'clock. All right.
No, I won't go into a funk.
Yeah. Okay. Good. All right. Payne and Pendergast with you. Drake May, he's going to get his first start of his NFL career against a really good defense in the Texans on Sunday. CJ Stroud loves Drake May, but doesn't love him enough to give him this. We will tell you what that is coming up next.